This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped. A beautiful Tuesday morning in Southern Ontario. It's a beautiful day for sports radio as well. I'm Aaron Karolnik. That's Carlo Koliakovo. Thank you for being with us. Whether you're listening live on your radio on TSN1050.ca or on the iHeartRadio Canada app, we appreciate you. And what a weekend it was, Coco. You and I haven't been on the air together since, I believe, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. You are just emerging from health and safety protocols, so we have a lot to catch up on, including the PGA Championship from Southern Hills in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's very rare that I have success with golf wagers these days. I've been pretty cold, but man, it was quite a weekend for my boy Will the Thrill Zalatoris, who gets into a playoff with Justin Thomas, who won the PGA in 2017, which is an incredible accomplishment for Will Zalatoris in that he has the worst putting stroke on the planet.
Oh, my God.
It is so...
He's got the yips.
He has, I don't know, I think it's just his stroke. He can just kind of, can't stroke it. It's terrible.
How do you jive and like, I don't know how he does that with his hands. It's like, it's a backward twitch, stutter, and then follow through. It's like, what are you doing, man? You're on the PGA Tour.
He's almost won multiple majors. He was right there with JT. He almost won the Masters a couple of years ago. He's always in the top 10. In major tournaments, but it was Justin Thomas who emerged as the PGA champion once again, was seven shots back at the beginning of the final round, and it took everybody puking all over themselves for JT to get back in
and fire
a final round 67. But I think in many respects, and congrats to JT, this will be not remembered as the tournament that Justin Thomas won, Coco, but the tournament that Mito Pereira lost. And this was not a Jean Vandeveld situation. Jean Vandeveld was three up standing on the 18th tee at the Open in 1999. And we remember him in the water, him chunking it into the water and into the sand and then actually rolling in like a 12-footer to ultimately lose in a playoff to Paul Lurie. Wow, what memory I have of the 1999 Open. But this was kind of close in that Mito Pereira's two up. Standing on the 18th tee, decides to hit driver inexplicably, ends up in the water on the right side and makes a double on 18, one of the toughest holes on the PGA Tour, I should mention. And he's not even in the playoff against JT right. and Zalatoris. He just needed a bogey to get in the playoff and ultimately makes a double and is on the outside looking in. And that's a tough one for Mito. You know, you and I do that all the time on 17 and 18, just choke away quality rounds like me yesterday. But for Mito Pereira to make that decision was a difficult, difficult look for him. And that's something he'll be waking up and staring at the ceiling probably until maybe for the rest of his life. Be like, why did I hit driver? Why didn't I just hit a hybrid or a three wood? That was a big mistake.
Yeah, very big mistake. I actually feel really bad for him with the way that happened, because for 2 days he was in total control. And every time there was that moment of a potential choke job, he found a way to, you know, redeem himself and collect himself and see, like, okay, and he make a big shot, big putt on the next hole and find a way to, you know, restore his lead and stay comfortably ahead. And I hated seeing the way he did that on the 18th hole. And then, you know, I understand, you know, he had a certain shot in mind on 18, but you're one hole away from winning a major as a complete, you know, underdog.
No name. Like, no name. He was a no name.
If I'm his caddy, I don't even bring the driver onto the tee box on 18. Like, well, how is that even an option for him, you know, knowing that that's the agreement on the club that they came up with, knowing that you just needed a bogey to win.
A bogey would have put him in
a playoff. Sorry, yes.
Yeah, you need a par to win.
So, you know, I feel bad for the guy because we'll probably never hear from him ever again.
It's true. It's like, bye, Mito.
And, you know, he overcame a lot of odds. He played really, really good golf. And to think that one decision on one hole cost him millions of dollars and a chance to win his first ever major championship, and it opened the door for, you know, Justin Thomas, who had a great finish near the end. You kind of sensed that once he went in with five under, that there was going to be a chance that he would get in, and if he was, I knew once if there was a playoffs, I knew Justin Thomas was winning. There, he was just too determined.
He was playing so well too. His ball striking down the stretch.
Oh my God,
nasty.
It was incredible. That shot he made on 17 to drive the green.
And the club twirl. I was like, oh man, that is sick.
And to think the guy and he joked about it too afterwards. To think he won a major on the same day he completely pulled a James Duffy on the course. Ooh. And shanked it so far right in the middle of his round. I mean, it just goes to show you anything can happen in a major, right? And you know, it's funny because with two holes left, they showed a list of the players that were in the running, you know, and how many majors each guy had won. And out of the top 10 guys that were there, that were in contention, there is only one guy on that list that had won a major championship. That was Justin Thomas. So another reason why I would have loved to see Mito Pereira win, I like seeing new guys, you know, get their moment of glory. And I wish Zalatoris would have won, but I think I told you on Saturday, like Zalatoris pissed away his tournament on Saturday because, you know, the thing that frustrates me is when you're that good at golf, okay, or at any sport, usually you should be a good good student. And what I mean by that is he was the last tee time on Saturday. How are you or your caddy not watching the things that the players are struggling with earlier on in the day and saying to yourself, okay, maybe we should play this hole a certain way with the wind and the conditions and the way the greens are rolling and stuff like that? He went out and just hacked it all around the course on Saturday. And I'm thinking to myself, did you not see the guys in front of you struggle? Like, why are you making these type of decisions and these type of shots and these type of club selections? And he pissed away his tournament. He shot, what, plus four, plus five on Saturday?
Yeah, I think he would say it was three over on Saturday. You can tell from your voice, and I guess we've talked a lot about Will Zalatoris, and the audience says, why are these guys talking so much about Will Zalatoris? Well, both Carlo and I had good wagers on Zalatoris to win. So, needless to say, a little bit perturbed.
And then Tiger Woods. I mean,
well,
oh my
God. I was going to get to Tiger, and I've been struggling since he decided to withdraw about how to look at Tiger. Like, should we be impressed or depressed by Tiger? I don't know the answer. On one side, you have Tiger, who makes the cut at the Masters, makes the cut at the PGA, something like, you know, Dustin Johnson missed the cut. You had Scottie Scheffler miss the cut at the PGA. Like, I mean, in that respect, you should be impressed. But then you see Tiger go out on Saturday, fire a 79, and just hit these slicey
He played bogey
drives.
Golf. He played bogey golf.
He did. It was tough. He was hobbling around. And I know I scoffed at you. Honestly, I almost started screaming at you when you suggested that Tiger should be allowed to use a cart. I've decided I'm on Tiger on the
If
cart.
John Daly can do it, well, why can't Tiger Woods do
well,
it?
Well, John Daly's probably got to have a Mickey of rum and coke, of rum, I should say, on each round and hack 40 darts. But, yeah, Tiger, I just can't stand watching this guy. And as soon as the bad shots start coming in, the limp comes in. And I get it. He's still recovering from that significant trauma.
If you want to see the best version of Tiger Woods, you cannot watch that guy walk a course for four straight days.
Well,
it just
and
can't
that's
happen.
It. He looks it good on the happen. First day. The second day, you're like, oh, you know what? And then by the third day, he just runs out of gas. And that's what happened at the Masters, and that's what happened this week at the PGA as well.
Well, what hurt him is that Friday he was one of the later tee times, and then Saturday morning he was one of the earlier tee times because of his score. And he said he couldn't get his proper recovery treatment in, whether it's ice baths, massages, whatever it is, or even just a quick turnaround with the cold conditions, which is obviously not a great thing if you've got, you know, some soreness or some, you know, some things that you're dealing with in your body. So, and obviously, when his round was over on Saturday and I watched him walk off that green and he didn't, like, wasn't available for comment, I said to you, I sent you a message. I go, Tiger's done. There's no way he's playing tomorrow.
Well, and the U.S. Open at Brookline coming up, I believe, in the middle of June. I think it's June 16th, Father's Day weekend. So we'll see what type of condition Tiger's in for that. And honestly, I'm kind of sick of the storyline of Tiger and his comeback. And I love Tiger Woods as much as anybody, but I'm kind of like, all right, well, you know, show me something now. Like, are we still going to do this whole thing every lead up to every major? Oh, look how Tiger's ball speed is. Wow. Like, I mean, I don't know.
Oh, here's the limp.
I'm kind of a little bit over it, but at the same time, it's impressive the fact that he made the cut.
100%
it is. And this is the new baseline for Tiger Woods, right? It's like before, is Tiger going to be
contention?
Now it's like, can he make the cut? That's the line of success for Tiger. And maybe his body and his health will continue to improve as he gets stronger and that much further removed from his injury. But for me, I'm kind of putting the brakes on the obsession with Tiger Woods. And it's maybe there's a time in the not-too-distant future he's in contention at a tournament, at a major. Who knows? But I'm a little bit sick of it. I don't know how you feel about that. But we'll talk to Bob Weeks, our golf insider from Golf Talk Canada. He'll join us at 8:45. And Bob Weeks, also my number one competitor in the Gold Bar League.
I saw that.
At the Rubber Boots podcast. So needless to say, Bob Weeks and I at odds this morning. So hopefully he, you know, doesn't say anything rude to me. Not that Bob Weeks ever would, because he's the greatest guy on the planet. Chris Johnston in about 25
Is the Canadian Open coming up soon, too?
The RBC Canadian Open, the week of June 6th.
Uh-huh.
So it is coming up for sure.
And yeah, 2 weeks.
I think we're on location for that. I have not heard anything to finish.
We are. Oh, Rod, look at your head shake. Yeah, let's go, baby.
Well, that's going to be quite a time there. And you and I, you know, in between segments, we'll probably be out chipping, putting, and, you know, focusing on our games more so than our radio.
By the way, did you see the setup that they created? I don't know what hole it is, but on the par 3 for the overdrive guys?
That's
the
16th hole. I think that's where we'll be set up as well. I don't know.
I guess
they'll be doing TV from there, too. I don't know how that's all going to work.
I don't know, but it looked amazing. Like, I saw the sort of little teaser on TSN last week, and, man, that's going to be fun. I can't wait for that.
I cannot wait for that, and our friends at Golf Canada did say we could come out and play at St. George's at some point before the tournament. So, you know, throwing it out there, I'm still down to go out and fire 120 at St. George's. So just
Lawrence,
let me know
Applebaum,
the time.
I know you listen to the show, buddy.
Lawrence,
we're calling you out.
Lawrence has got it. Lawrence knows.
We're calling you out, buddy.
I did see Lawrence was out there with Brian Hayes, Darcy Tucker. I can't recall the fourth member of the group. But
did our invite get lost in the mail
or something? We were invited.
We were on the air.
We were on the air. And I will say, I heard Hayes shot an 84 at St. George's, which is very impressive. And
What?
That's very
Hayes
impressive.
Hayes shot an 84 at St. George's?
St. George's? At that golf course, the way the rough is, and we heard from Duthie and Festchuk, it's apparently you land on the rough. Like, you're
well, they're growing it
ball.
for the Open, right?
So, I mean, shout out to Brian Hayes, whose golf game has clearly come a long way, probably due to the fine folks at TaylorMade in Golftown. Would be my guess, because
complaining on Overdrive a couple days ago about blowing up on 18 to shoot 76 or something like that?
I think Brian was a couple over and made a 9 on 18 at Coppenwood. So, yeah, that was a tough one for BH. But, I mean, listen, the guy's playing some golf right now. I wouldn't want to take him on a match. I mean, last time you and I took Hayes and the Grappler on Coco, they had to leave after 9 holes because they were getting beat so bad.
Yeah.
One of those two
they
things.
They pulled a tiger.
They left after 9, but they were not getting beat. So.
Yeah. They pulled a tiger.
TSN 1050's Fill My Ride is your chance to win hundreds of dollars in gas money. Every weekday around 7:20, we give away the Fill My Ride keyword of the day, and then we give away the cue to call in about an hour. The number is 416-870-1050. Today's keyword is dominance. Dominance is today's keyword.
Is that because of Connor McDominant?
I could be with regards to McDavid, could be with regards to Andre Vasilevsky, who shuts out Florida again. And we'll get into that as Vasilevsane
is what that is.
Oh, okay, you got to stop with these. Would that be a pun? A play on words? I don't know, whatever that would be. But
Vasilevsanity is what it is.
Yikes. Yes. You might want to give him a buzzer there, Chrissy. Sorry. Usually you're pretty good with those, but that's not your finest work. We'll workshop it during the commercial break. We'll come back with fill in the blank.
Not the best.
Not the best. There he is. Not Shut fill up, my ride. Louis. Fill in the blank. That's coming up with Chris Johnston standing by. This is First Up on TSN 1050. I've got a blank space, baby. Fill in the blank. Time for fill in the blank, your favorite game in high school when you're doing exams. For me, leaving them blank more so than filling them in. But we will be indeed filling in blanks now with our producer, Arad Osmandi. Go ahead, Arad.
Well, it was a long weekend with a lot of interesting sports going on. So with all the compelling sports over the weekend, blank was the best.
The best story? You're asking what the best story of the weekend was?
Well, let me rephrase that. Blank had your attention the most.
Okay, again, I'm confused. So are we talking about a sport or a sport moment?
Sports stories.
Well, you know what?
Which
you know what,
story had your... Was it Connor McDavid? Was it lightning sweeping?
Well,
was it Mitchell Pereira's?
It was clearly for me Connor McDavid and the way he has single-handedly dominated the Calgary Flames to the point where we'll play the clip from Matthew Tkachuk a little bit later where he's like, listen, they got one guy playing half the game. What are we supposed to do? And McDavid is just setting up Evander Kane for tap-ins. He has 9 multi-point games in 10 games this postseason. 9 of 10 of his games have been multi-point. McDavid is doing things that are incomprehensible in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He is my biggest story from the weekend in that he can't be stopped. And the Oilers with a chance to go up 3-1 on Calgary tonight.
He's at the 20-point mark. He's the fastest player to do it. I mean, it's amazing what this guy's doing. And it's not just that. It's the level of dominance that he's playing with when every time he's on the ice. You want to know why Calgary has no answers for him? Because there is no answers for Connor McDavid right now in the way that he's playing. He just cannot be stopped. There is nothing and nobody that can get in his way right now and stop him. The only thing that can stop him is himself. I'm sorry.
How about this stat on FanDuel right now? McDavid, his over-under is 1.5 points tonight. Shaded to the over, minus 175. That is crazy. That is something that I have never seen before, and I'm not sure we'll ever see again. This is in the playoffs. Yeah. This is not a regular season game against Buffalo. This is against the Calgary Flames in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Connor McDavid is legitimately unstoppable. It's crazy what's going on in Edmonton with McDavid, Dreisaitl, and with Kane.
I think I read a stat that in 2018, when the Penguins won the... Is it 18 when they won their last championship?
I was 16 and 17.
Okay, so 17. Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby finished the playoffs with like 24 points.
I know.
And Connor McDavid has that. We're in the middle of the second round.
He might win the Conn Smythe by playing 2 rounds.
Yeah.
I know it's never happened.
I think to me the most compelling story of the weekend is what the Tampa Bay Lightning continue to do. I mean, the fact that they won a playoff series without their best player, Braden Point, in a sweet fashion against the President's Trophy Florida Panthers. And by the way, the Florida Panthers played nowhere near as good as they played in the regular season. They led the regular season in goals for with 337. You know how many they scored in this round in 4 games? 3.
Dude, they averaged 4 goals a game. And they scored 3 in 4 games.
And I guess that's what I walk away with is just how amazing Andrei Vasilevskiy is. I mean, the stat moves to 7-0 now. 7-0 over the last 3 seasons. His record in closeout series games, which includes 6 shutouts. 6 shutouts in 7 games to close out a series over the last 3 years. Absolutely incredible. People ask today, how do I feel about the Leafs? I don't feel any better or worse about the Leafs. The Leafs blew their chance. They woke up the sleeping Giants in Vasilevskiy and the Tampa Bay Lightning. They have nobody but to blame but themselves. I don't feel sorry for the Maple Leafs one bit.
No, and for those who are pointing out, oh, look what the Leafs did against Tampa. Look what Florida did against Tampa. I mean, look what the Leafs did against Montreal last year or Columbus the year before. So pump the brakes on the whole. Oh, with the
you
Leafs
know what Montreal did last Tampa. Year when they rallied against the Maple Leafs? They swept the Winnipeg Jets.
That's right.
They beat the Vegas Golden Knights to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, which ultimately ended up losing to Tampa Bay Lightning. I expect the Tampa Bay Lightning to do the same thing. They beat the Leafs. They sweep their next team. They're going to win the next round. I'm buying into the three-peat, man. I've told you this from the beginning, that Tampa Bay was my team to come out of the East, and Tampa Bay was my pick right now. Until somebody beats them, they're my team to win. And the best part about it is they might get Braden Point back.
Well, they're going to get Braden Point back at
some point.
You don't
know that.
I mean, I guess you don't, but he has been working out reportedly. I've not heard that he's been on the ice at all, but if Carolina and the Rangers go 6-7 games, which I think is very realistic, Braden Point might get another week here to recover and perhaps be ready for the conference finals. And you get Braden Point back in the conference finals. Man, Tampa looking good. We should
mention, matter if they get him back or not. They have a guy in net that can win you a series by himself.
It matters to get Braden Point back. It helps a lot. And
okay,
maybe,
let's go to the next question. Let's get the next fill in the blank.
All right, go ahead, Arad.
So with the Leafs signed Mark Giordano over the weekend. That's their first off-season domino to fall. So the next off-season domino for the Maple Leafs is blank.
Sign Jack Campbell. Have to. You have to. I was having this conversation with a bunch of my Leaf buddies on the weekend, and they're like, oh, with Vasilevsky and stuff, you can't win unless you got Vasilevsky. Like, Jack Campbell gave the Maple Leafs 2 years in a row good enough goaltending to win in the playoffs. They just didn't get it done. And now you think you're going to go out on the market and find somebody better than Jack Campbell? I don't see how you do that. To me, there's one guy in the league that can do what Vasilevsky does. Everybody else is going to give you above league average goaltending. So why not continue that with a guy that you know absolutely everything about in Jack Campbell? Do you want to go make another Peter Mrazek mistake and bring in a guy you know absolutely nothing about and he ends up being a bust for you? I don't see why you do that.
What about John Gibson? That's the hot rumor du jour these days on
Are you
the
kidding
Twitters?
Me with John Gibson? Honest to God. Like, I don't understand people. They want to go from Jack Campbell, who will cost you anywhere from $4 to $5 million, to John Gibson, who's going to cost you $6.5 million for the next 6 years.
That seems like a bad contract to take on. I would be very cautious.
I don't
about
understand
that one.
What's wrong with people. I really don't.
Well, what if Anaheim takes Mrazek? What if Anaheim takes Mrazek too? Yeah, we'll take John Gibson. We'll see. Maybe that's a trade that could be worked out. You know, we're playing armchair general manager here on Fill in the Blank. We'll ask Chris Johnston his thoughts about how the Leafs will proceed in their offseason when he joins us for, we'll bring back Leafs Breakfast. We did tell Dregs on Friday that it was the final Leafs Breakfast, but there's a lot of Leaf news after Gio signed a 2-year deal worth $800,000. Coming up on the other side, we'll tell you what a former Maple Leaf did as a member of the Colorado Avalanche. Nazem Kadri is not a fan of the city of St. Louis and vice versa. And he made it known not once, not twice, but three times with a hat-trick performance for the Avs against the Blues last night, putting Colorado up 3-1. We'll hear from Kadri and we'll break it all down as First Up continues here on TSN 1050. So Nazem Kadri, an amazing regular season with Colorado. When Nathan MacKinnon went down early on in the season, Kadri stepped up and put up huge point totals. He was, close to 90 points in the regular season. And we know Nazem Kadri has had his struggles in the postseason, mostly staying on the ice. The two suspensions with the Maple Leafs ultimately led to his departure to Colorado, where Alex Kerfoot and Tyson Barrie, you almost forget, Tyson Barrie also part of that trade in return for Nazem Kadri. And it's no surprise he comes up as a agitator, as a issue for his opponents in the Stanley Cup playoffs, including in Game 3 against St. Louis, where he's driving to the net, collision with Jordan Binnington. I don't think he meant to crash Jordan Binnington like Milan Lucic did to Mike Smith, but it ended up a serious injury for Binnington to the point where he has been ruled out for the rest of this round. And Binnington was a stud since the end of that Minnesota series for St. Louis, one of the hottest goalies in the league for sure. And you bring in Ville Husso, who has not been playing as well. That makes a huge difference for Colorado. So needless to say, for St. Louis and for Colorado, needless to say, the fans of the Blues weren't big fans of the play, and there were some disgusting things that were alleged to have been written to Kadri on social media and otherwise, racist things, extremely inappropriate comments made towards Kadri. So he goes out in game four, scores a hat trick, two during the second period. And I mean, it's a delightful story because All those people who were saying those terrible things to Kadri were eating it. And he made it known that you can't stand for that stuff, obviously, but the way he goes out and shows it on the ice to those fans, and there's a lot of taunting. I mean, I'm not saying that people in the Blues arena were the ones who were writing the racist stuff to him, but it was great to see him respond in that way, and a huge win for Colorado, 6-3 over St. Louis last night.
Yeah, look, I'm really happy for Nazem Kadri, and I bet there's a lot of people in the hockey world that feel the same way because, you know, of the things that he's had to deal with over the last 24 hours, and to basically respond in the best way possible. I mean, you talk about a way of just shoving it to people that, you know, say stupid things and do stupid things, you know, about, you know, who you are and what you do. The best way to go out and do it is just show them up. And you talk about a show-up performance by Nazem Kadri. Playoff Nazem Kadri is fun to watch, man. I'm not going to lie. The guy is fun to watch because he plays with such an edge, such a chip on his shoulder, and he can be such an effective player. I mean, just think about his playoff reputation. I mean, clearly he's a guy that has not been able to be around in playoffs because of the things he's done to get himself suspended and removed from play. I mean, 2 years in a row with the Maple Leafs, and you think, you know, how much different those playoff outcomes could have been if he was available for the Maple Leafs in those two playoff series. And you can say the same thing about Colorado's playoff, you know, history last year, where they swept the Blues in the first round. But again, he makes a play that gets him suspended, and he's not available in the second round. And what does Colorado do in the second round? They lose to the Vegas Golden Knights. Well, guess who's available in the second round this year? That's Nazem Kadri, and guess where Colorado is in the series? They're up 3-1 right now. And yes, so much changed in this series because, look, you heard me on Dump and Chase last week actually pick the Blues to win this series, and I actually believe the Blues had a chance to win this series if Jordan Binnington would have been available for this team because he was outstanding in Game 1, almost stole the game from them. They put up 54 shots in an overtime victory. He was... He shut the door on them in Game 2 in an impressive victory. He was having an unreal start to Game 3 until there was an unfortunate collision that took him out of the game, and that series just changed completely when he left. And Colorado did exactly what they needed to do. They built on that momentum, led by Nazem Kadri in last night's game, in his heroic efforts, considering everything they've been through, and it's so nice to see when players respond in that way. They do their talking on the ice with their play, with their profession. Because they really can't control anything else that's said about them, regardless of how you feel about it. There's nothing we can do. We're trying to change the way people do and say things around the world because what he had to deal with is unacceptable. But good for Nazem Kadri, man. That's all I have to say about that because it was really, really fun seeing him excel in that moment and be the star that he was last night, scoring three goals.
Kadri helping Colorado up to go up 3-1 on St. Louis, and two teams tonight have a chance to do the same thing. The Carolina Hurricanes up 2-1 on the Rangers. They play Game 4 tonight at Madison Square Garden, and the Calgary Flames in Edmonton tonight. I mean, the McDavid show continues, and Evander Kane, Leon Draisaitl putting up gaudy numbers so far against Calgary. We'll get into that story with Chris Johnston, and we'll get his take on Mark Giordano returning to the blue and white on a two-year deal worth $1.6 million. That's next as Chris Johnston, our hockey insider, joins us here on First Up.
This is Leafs Breakfast.
I believe in the team. I believe that this team is a contender, and that was my first stop, but then all the rest that comes with it, me being from Toronto and it being a really... really great opportunity for my family, and all those thoughts went into it, and we came up with obviously a deal pretty quickly.
That is Mark Giordano back in the blue and white for two more seasons after signing a contract over the weekend. Welcome into Leafs Breakfast. Karolnik and Koliakova with you here on First Up, and we welcome in our TSN hockey insider, Chris Johnston, into the conversation. What's up, CJ?
Not much. How you doing, guys?
We're good, man. We're good. And I think Toronto Maple Leafs fans are feeling pretty good about the Geo signing. A deal I don't think we're surprised to see him back in Toronto, Chris, but at the number, $800,000 a year for two seasons, that surprised a lot of people, including myself. What was your take on the amount of money that Geo got from the Leafs?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure we've seen sort of a bigger hometown discount, you know, anywhere in recent memory in the NHL. You know, $800,000 is beneficial for a number of reasons. If for any reason the Leafs feel he can't be in the NHL in the next 2 years, you know, they could send him to the AHL and not have a cap penalty. So really the team takes on no risk. We're still talking about a defenseman who had 35 points last year. So clearly he would have a place to, you know, push for more money. And you know, I think it's a strong statement about his desire to try to be part of the solution in Toronto, to give the team as much flexibility as possible to sign players around him. And I think it's easy for me to say, or any fan to say, oh yeah, leave less money on the table. But, you know, to actually do it, I think is quite admirable and puts the Leafs in a great spot.
I remember the day after they acquired Giordano, we were in the TSN studios and I told you this was going to happen. You were like, you looked at me surprised and I'm like, you were like, really? Why would he do that? And I'm like, that's just, I told you what he wanted to do. I mean, didn't come as a surprise to me. I think this is just him understanding where he is in his career and, you know, the amount of money that he's made and just wants to be happy. And it just, it's refreshing to know that they just found a way to get it done as quick as they did.
Well, I think the timing helps too. You know, the fact that it's, you know, a week after the series ended, you know, the Leafs have obviously a lot of other decisions to make this offseason, and knowing he's locked in, you know, basically just above league minimum salary, you know, gives him, you know, I think, just more time to figure out how the other pieces are going to fit together. And so, I mean, it's awesome. I think it's great, honestly. I mean, it's hard to think of anything else to say, you know, from Giordano's side, because he could easily be making $2 or $3 million somewhere else, even if it wasn't Toronto. But, you know, clearly it's important for him to play in his hometown. And I do think this does give him just a little bit more breathing room now to try to sign other players or look at other moves that can make them better for next year.
So, CJ, now that this move is done, if you're the Maple Leafs, does this open the door to moving some other pieces out on defense? Because we've talked about, you know, two guys that have to play on this Maple Leafs defense next year. Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren have to be full-time NHLers. You got Mark Giordano now. So does this open the door for a Jake Muzzin departure on this blue line?
I don't know if it's quite that simple. I mean, I think it's possible, certainly, just because of Jake Muzzin's contract, you know, where he's at in his career, some of the injuries he's had. You know, whether the team can expect him to play something close to 82 games next year, all those factor into it, plus just obviously the hard salary cap. But, you know, he's a beloved player inside the organization. I know the coaching staff loves him, management loves him, his teammates love him. And so, you know, the decision won't just be a financial one. But, you know, it's tough to know how it all fits. I mean, if you have four left-shot defensemen that play on the left side, when you include Sandin, Giordano, O'Reilly, and Muzzin, you know, and only three spots to dress each night, that would seem to be a problem, unless there's some way they feel that maybe Rasmus Sandin could play the right side, or maybe Morgan Riley. I don't know. I mean, we just haven't seen either of those guys do it enough to think that that's a full-time solution. It does sort of point you in that direction, but, you know, I think that would be still a difficult move for them to make internally. But maybe, look, when we talk about moves that would make an impact or would be felt, you know, certainly that would qualify if they were to go down that road. And so we'll just have to see. You know, Jake Muzzin has a modified no trade clause, so he's got some say in any move the Leafs would have to make. And so, you know, we'll see if that's where they go next. But certainly this gives them more options, having one more guy signed.
Our guest is TSN hockey insider Chris Johnston, and the team that eliminated the Leafs in seven games, the Tampa Bay Lightning, they go out against Florida and sweep away the Panthers, a team, CJ, that averaged four goals per game in the regular season. They scored three goals in four games in the series against Tampa, a mind-blowingly poor performance from the Panthers offensively. What do you make of what happened there in the series between Tampa and Florida? What was your level of surprise there?
Well, certainly surprised to see them swept. I think they got Vasilevskied, though, a little bit, if we're being honest. You know, if you look at sort of the amount of shots they had, you know, I don't know where they ended up last night, but they certainly had a lot more than the Lightning
close,
did.
Close to 50.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, the underlying numbers suggested they should have scored 13 goals in the series, so Vasilevskiy took away 10 goals that were expected in four games. So I think it's a crazy goaltending performance in some ways. You know, a couple of those games were tight, you know, including last night's game. So, you know, give the Lightning credit. You know, they also did it without Braden Point, injured, you know, in game seven here in Toronto. So a whole bunch of reasons. It just makes you think, man, are the Lightning just this unstoppable force? Are they going to keep finding a way to claw through whatever they face and maybe win a third straight Stanley Cup, which is pretty much unthinkable in a 32-team league. You know, I give them credit, but also I really do think a huge factor in that series was that the Vasilevskiy started playing like, you know, the guy he's been for a lot of years versus what we saw against the Leafs, you know, where, you know, certainly came up big at the end of the series, but he was very gettable for the Leafs, and, you know, they put a lot of pucks behind him in that first round.
So I guess the question that a lot of people are asking this morning, CJ, is should Maple Leaf fans feel better about their loss against Tampa Bay, knowing that Tampa Bay just swept through the Florida Panthers, or should they feel worse? To me, shouldn't feel any different. At the end of the day, the Maple Leafs squandered an amazing opportunity. They had the Lightning on the ropes. They made Vasilevskiy look average, and they let them off the hook. To me, that doesn't change anything about how I feel about the Maple Leafs. If anything, you should still be upset that the Maple Leafs lost.
Sure, and I think some fans probably will feel worse because, you know, I was of the view when that series was going on that the Leafs would have to get all the way to the Cup before they faced a better team than Tampa, you know, if they got through it. You know, you're up 1-0, 2-1, 3-2 in the series. You're up in Game 6. Of the series with a chance to close it out.
10 minutes left in the third.
Yeah, I mean, if you get through that, I do think the Leafs would have been in a great position to go on a long playoff run, not just, you know, finally win one series. But, you know, everything, it's hard to say that for sure, though, right? I mean, we don't know what Jack Campbell would have looked like against the Panthers. I mean, it's just sort of like you get into the butterfly effect. You can't predict everything that would have gone on. But certainly, I think the Leafs, had they beat the Lightning, were in a great spot to do something special this spring. And so, you know, I guess that probably makes you feel worse depending on how you view it. Maybe you feel better, like they're closer, but who knows, man. It's a long time till next year, and we're going to find out if they're going to be able to finally put one of those together.
Game four tonight between the Flames and the Oilers. The Oilers up 2-1 behind Connor McDavid, CJ, who has 23 points in 10 games for the Oilers. Only Wayne Gretzky has more points through a team's first 10 playoff games. Wayne Gretzky, the only guy to do something that Connor McDavid has done so far in this postseason. And, I mean, Leon Draisaitl had four assists in a period. Evander Kane, a natural hat trick. The Calgary Flames are in tough here, and you heard some of the commentary emerging after the game. Matthew Tkachuk saying, they've got one guy who plays half the game. What are we supposed to do, basically? What would you be telling your team if you're Daryl Sutter this morning about how to slow down the McDavid, Draisaitl, and Kane line?
Man, I mean, I don't know that you can slow it down. You're just trying to come out somewhere close to even against that line. I mean, the beauty is there is still another half game those guys aren't playing, and really more than half a game. But, you know, there's only so much you can do. I mean, Connor McDavid scored at basically historical levels since the minute he entered the league. He's clearly taken it to another level now. He's, you know, he's in the prime of his career. And, you know, if he had 23 points in 10 regular season games, we'd be gushing about it. I mean, these are playoff games. You know, this is a time of year where all the great players tend to score less than what they would average in the regular season. And he's a man on a mission. You know, it probably helps. We've seen some higher scoring games this year's playoffs. It was a 9-6 game in this series, so this isn't maybe what the playoffs has always been in our minds, but, you know, McDavid's been awesome. I mean, Draisaitl had those four assists. He's playing on a sprained ankle, which is pretty remarkable in itself. And Evander Kane, you know, that's turned out to be a pretty darn good signing for Edmonton. I mean, he produced for them consistently in the regular season. He's continued in the playoffs, and you know, they've got it going on right now, but I still see this as a long series. I mean, give Mike Smith credit. He was great in the last game, but, you know, I'm not certain that how much that will continue. I think the Flames are a great team. I mean, I see this going punch for punch this series, and you know, I don't think you could do to purely stop McDavid, but you just try to keep him under 3 points a game, and you still got a chance to win those games.
I tell you what, though, man, at the pace that he's playing at right now, I'd love to see Edmonton go right to the Cup final, because I mean, you marvel at what McDavid's doing, and clearly he's worth the price of admission if you're going to watch him right now in the playoffs, because he's activated beast mode. He actually should change his name to Connor McDomination, because nice. That's what he's been. Speaking of dominant player, how great was it to see playoff Nazem Kadri take over in that game yesterday?
Well, personally, I loved it. I mean, I spent a lot of time around Naz in his time in Toronto, and, you know, I really liked the guy. And you know, let's face it, the only issue for him has been getting to play the playoff games.
Right.
If you look at the games he's played, he's consistently been a player that's shown up and had some moments and scored goals. And, you know, I think particularly the circumstances around his game last night where, you know, I don't know if you saw on Instagram, but, you know, his wife did share some of the posts that he received, you know, following the game three, you know, pretty disgusting stuff, you know, Islamophobia aimed his way by a number of fans. It wasn't just like one crazed person on Twitter or something like that. And so amid all that sort of talk, and, you know, they had to beef up the police presence around the team and everything just to make sure he's safe, that, you know, to see the Blues kind of losing their mind on him and drawing some penalties and then scoring the hat trick. I mean, it's pretty much a tour de force performance, as you're going to see in the playoffs. And I think, you know, under those circumstances, you're seeing a player who rose to the moment, who didn't, you know, shy away from, you know, what must have been a tough couple of days for him, I can only imagine. And, you know, now as the Avalanche on the verge of moving into the third round, I mean, that's pretty special game for Naz. And let's remember, he's a free agent in a few weeks' time. And so might help make himself some money, too. You know, he already had a fantastic regular season production-wise, but, you know, he's showing himself to be someone who can handle the physical side of the game, who performs when the other team, you know, almost makes him the enemy. And, you know, I think that was one of those games that'll go down as one of the more special ones of his career.
Yeah, sure. It's sure special to watch some Maple Leafs, former Maple Leafs, play on other teams. I mean, you talk about Nazem Kadri, what he's doing with Colorado in the playoffs, Zach Hyman, what he's doing with Edmonton in the playoffs, and it just makes you wonder, what if or why couldn't they be those guys for the Maple Leafs? And maybe it's a Maple Leaf thing. Who knows? But I guess we'll have to wait another year to find out.
Well, for being fair, Kadri's trade is probably the biggest mistake of Kyle Dubas' time as GM. I mean, it wasn't a total disaster. I mean, they have a player in Alex Kerfoot who plays for the team, but, you know, just given Kadri's contract's been $4.5 million the last 3 years, you know, they just felt they couldn't trust him, right? But, you know, I think it was probably an error, and clearly this is a guy that can perform in the playoffs. And so, you know, would have been nice probably to have that, but, you know, every GM's going to make those mistakes along the way too.
Yeah, they sure are. Let's focus in on the other series that's going on. That's Carolina and the Rangers playing game four tonight. We saw some fireworks take place at the end of the game. We saw some comments with Gerard Gallant post game. Typical stuff you'd see in a playoff series as it moves on. But there was a Freddie Anderson sighting in practice the other day, and I'm not sure how much you know about that situation, but could we potentially be seeing Freddie Anderson returned to the Carolina Hurricanes?
Well, it's obviously a great sign to see him be a full participant in practice. You know, he's basically, what I know about is, you know, he had the knee injury in the last week of the season, regular season. You know, there wasn't any real structural damage to the knee, at least not what was found in what they looked at in the MRIs. But, you know, he hasn't felt comfortable, and so it's been quite a long layoff for him. I think it's been, you know, frustrating for the Hurricanes to a certain degree because of the uncertainty. And remember, there's a similar situation here last year in Toronto where, you know, Anderson missed several weeks during the year, and they couldn't really figure out what was wrong. You know, I think he finally felt like he got to a solution in the off season, and, you know, he obviously had a great year for the Hurricanes playing, but the timing of this has been off. But fortunately, his team has found a way to win enough games where they've extended the window for him to potentially get back in there. And so I do think, you know, if he gets to a spot where he's comfortable to play, we'll see him enter the series at some point. In kind of an unusual circumstance for a team that's up 2-1 in the second round, they've already used two goaltenders in this playoff and haven't even got to their number one guy. So he'll be, you know, the third goalie they use, you know, should he get back in there. And so, you know, he's working his way back to that spot. I would think he still needs a bit more time, but, you know, that's great news for them because the best version of the Hurricanes we saw this year was the version with Freddie Anderson in net.
CJ,
7 o'clock start.
Sorry, I just got one more question to ask before we head out. Postmortem for the Florida Panthers. First time they get shut out all season. They do it in an elimination game against Tampa Bay. They lose four straight. What do you think is in the offseason for the Florida Panthers, considering everything they gave up to give themselves the best chance to win this year?
Well, we always talk about, you know, teams like Toronto having cap challenges. You know, Florida sees raises come in next year for Alexander Barkov, Carter Verhaeghe. You know, those guys deserve raises and earn them, but, you know, that's less money to spend there. They gave up the first-round picks for Ben Chiarot and Claude Giroux. You know, they'll do what they can to keep their team together, but they're gonna be in tough to make things a lot better, too, just because we're in a flat-cap league. So, you know, it's going to be a tough offseason for Bill Zito. He's been good, I think, in his couple of years as their GM, of finding value, you know, getting guys in the door that outperform their contracts. And that'll be on his wish list too, because he's not going to have a lot of money to spend to roll back the Panthers and try to make sure that they're a little more prepared for a tough series like the one they just went through with the Lightning.
Rangers Hurricanes game four tonight at 7 in the Battle of Alberta, Calgary and Edmonton at 9:30. I much prefer a 9:30 start as opposed to a 10:30 start, is something we were subjected to over the weekend in the Battle of Alberta. So maybe I could stay up for the first period. Who knows? We'll see how it all plays out. CJ, thank you for doing this, buddy.
All right. Be well, guys. Have a great day.
Are you too. That's Chris Johnston, our hockey insider. I think it was Friday night was the 10:30 start in the Battle of Alberta.
So
I think
stupid.
It was more like 10:50. Yeah. For whatever reason, they started at 8:50 local, and that game didn't end until after 1 o'clock in the morning. I just still struggle to comprehend how that possibly was decided on by the NHL, and it was a massive.
Well, I ended up getting a reason behind it, apparently because ESPN had the contract rights for the PGA Championship, so that had to be pushed back because the Carolina game started at 8 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock. And for broadcasting rights, they wanted to get both games in, so that's why they pushed it. And I'm thinking to myself, you had one game on Saturday. Why couldn't you push the Edmonton and Calgary game to Saturday and give people the chance to watch that game at a normal hour?
Yeah, I mean, Connor McDavid should be mandatory viewing for every young hockey fan. And the fact that so many young hockey fans, and I get it, listen, there's time zone differences, I understand. It just sucks that so many people have to miss the McDavid magic every night, and that's a late night, you know, 9:30 start tonight, and I get it. It's in Edmonton. What are you going to do? You're not going to cater to the Eastern time zone as much as I would love that, but it's just like the 10:30 start I thought was just a complete joke for Oilers Flames on Friday night, and that series has been so entertaining, so many goals, and I can't wait for tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's also going to be a lot of fun when Steve Levy joins us from ESPN, has been the host on the NHL on ESPN throughout the course of their Stanley Cup playoff coverage. He'll join us in about 10 minutes, and Bob Weeks in about 35 minutes as we look back on the PGA Championship and look ahead to the U.S. Open, the third hour of First Up next.
You were like, really? Why would he do that? And I'm like...
This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped.